Thank you for listening to the Resources for Integrated Care podcast series, Promising Practices for Utilizing Motivational Interviewing to Improve Care Coordination and Address Social Determinants of Health. This podcast is excerpted from a webinar presented live on August 17th, 2023. In this podcast, Brittany Jackson, a consultant at the Lewin Group, facilitates a panel discussion with Dr. Brandon G. Wilson, Director of the Center for Consumer Engagement in Health Innovation at Community Catalyst, Gladys Antello Allen, the Associate Director of Education and Training at Camden Coalition, and Brian Thompson, a Housing Coordinator at Camden Coalition. During this discussion, panelists offer strategies and promising practices regarding utilizing motivational interviewing to improve care coordination and address social determinants of health.
We are going to go ahead now and move into our panel discussion portion of the call. So the first question I will direct at Gladys and then Brandon. What are the key considerations for remaining person-centered in motivational interviewing conversations?
I want to say one. I think there are quite a few considerations. You want to check yourself. Check yourself at the door. I don't think that we talked about that. So many of us coming into this work have our own experiences, our own traumas, our own biases, our own stuff, our own opinions about things and how they should go. And we bring that with us. And to say that we are always non-judgmental would be a lie, right? We all have our own judgments. But it's so important that we're checking ourselves and our stuff at the door. It's important that we put those things aside to really be present with our members, right? Being able to connect with people is really key in this work, and the tools of MI really help support that. However, people can really feel when they're being judged, right? They start to disengage. Our body language, our responses, our tones, they all can cause someone to take a pause and not open up. So we really need to be mindful of that. And a great way to do that is connecting back to that spirit of MI, right? It's utilizing that empathy piece that I heard Dr. Wilson and I heard Brian talk about, right? Being empathetic really means I may not be experiencing what you're experiencing, right? Or I may not agree with your decisions. However, I can empathize on how difficult this is for you. I can see how this is affecting you, right? We're intentionally putting ourselves in this vulnerable space to be able to feel what that individual can feel in that extent, right? That we can be in that moment with them. We're literally crawling down that hole with them, right? Wherever they're at and experiencing that with them, because people can feel that. When we're able to kind of put aside all of our stuff, we're in a better place to be able to be more empathetic with our individuals.
Yes, I'll jump in. Thank you, Gladys. Thanks for the question, Brittany. Honestly, I think Gladys and Brian, their examples really exemplify some of it. It's like collaborating with individuals to set their goals and develop an action plan that I think aligns with their values and preferences. Brian talked about that. Respecting their autonomy and involving them in their own decision-making process. It's creating a safe and inclusive environment. Tailoring communication styles and language to ensure that it resonates with different cultures and backgrounds. At the heart, I think some of this is really person-centered care, where individuals, their needs and preferences and values are driven in every interaction, where it's beyond transactional. I think, as Gladys mentioned, motivation interview, and I think it really aligns seamlessly with this approach. It fosters this open dialogue of active engagement. We know all now that disparities in healthcare are real, and they often stem from unequal access, opportunities, and resources. And MI can really serve as an approach that helps us to acknowledge these disparities, and then not just acknowledge them, but then move into dismantling them. Can really empower care coordinators to engage with sensitivity and actively understand how we can address disparities and move towards an equitable pathway. This is really important, I would say, because if we even take just person-centeredness, we've done some research at the Center for Community Engagement and Health Innovation at Community Catalyst around person-centered care, and we've found that those who experience it by their own self-report, we see vast disparities in that. Black and Latinx individuals are less likely to experience person-centered care than white and Asian counterparts. This is important because we know that persons who believe that they receive person-centered care are more likely to have better control of chronic conditions. They're more likely to receive preventative care. They're more likely to have satisfaction with their care. and they're more likely to have lower healthcare costs over the healthcare continuum. So those are really four real tangible outcomes related to person-centered care and how MI can help us bridge that gap.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. All right, on the next slide, our second question for our panelists. What are best practices for utilizing motivational interviewing to address social determinants of health?
Yeah, so in again here, Brittany, I think a really good model for that was actually Camden was a leader in the Accountable Health Communities model, which was a CMS Innovation Center model, which was the first to systemically and on a national level screen for social determinants or health-related social needs with the goal of seeing if we could reduce unnecessary ED utilization, have a clinical or quality impact, as well as a reduction in unnecessary healthcare expenditures. Those in a model such as Camden found that using a motivational interviewing was a really key predictor of increasing screening uptake and utilization amongst Medicare and Medicaid beneficiaries universally. I'd also say on a more pragmatic level, like starting conversation by actively listening to individual stories and allowing them to share unique experiences. I think Brian Gladys mentioned some of this, like around the transportation and housing and food security needs. Often they're aware of many resources and challenges that they've already navigated through, validating and emphasizing the challenges that they may face due to disparities and injustices within their own communities. I think are all examples of some best practices of how we can use this for screening.
To follow up a little bit on that, another key element, I know we're hitting on the same things, is, you know, just to for social determinants health, remain curious and open-minded when you're engaging with a participant. Using those open-ended questions and reflective listening is always best practice. And then utilizing some of the core motivation interviewing techniques. It's the acronym is OARS, but it is open-ended questioning, affirming, reflecting, and summarize. It'll help you gain a better understanding of what some of the needs are and some of the experiences our clients or participants have been through.
Excellent, Brian. Thank you so much. All right, we are going to go ahead and move forward. Okay, thank you so much. So our final panel question we have here is, how can healthcare leaders ensure that member voices are heard and incorporated into their care? So if each one of our speakers want to just take a few moments to answer, and then we will move into live audience Q&A. So if we want to start with Gladys, and then Brian, and then Brandon, and then we'll move into grabbing a few questions from the audience.
Sure. I'll try to be really brief. So our members are our greatest assets. So for us at the Coalition, the people with lived experience of complex health and social needs have very important and unique insights that are really needed to create better systems of care for our communities and for their communities. So some of the tangible ways in which healthcare leaders may incorporate the members' voices into their care is by amplifying their voices and experiences and creating opportunities where they feel safe to share those experiences and have a seat at the table. So some examples of how we've done that in Camden is our community advisory committee, and that's a group of Camden residents that meet monthly to take an active role in improving their own health as well as the health of their families and community members. We also have our National Consumer Scholars. It's, again, one of our national initiatives. And those individuals have firsthand experience living with or caring for someone with complex health and social needs, as well as experience working as a consumer advocates, advisors, or experts in their own communities. And over the course of their engagement with us, the consumer scholars take part in leadership, skill development, peer-to-peer learning activities. They also partner with the Camden Coalition staff on a variety of projects to really strengthen and inform our work and the field of complex care. One example of that is our complex care certificate course that's coming out. We have been able to infuse their perspective. They've been a really in all over that certificate program that's really intended to really train the workforce of complex care. So it's really important to have that lens, their expertise in that build. They also play an active role in our annual conference, Putting Care at the Center, with the goal of really bringing lessons back to their local communities as well.
Speaking of Amplify that Gladys touched on earlier, we have a consumer voices bureau that is called Amplify, and it was created to increase opportunities in organizations across the country to build partnerships with lived experience of complex health and social needs to strengthen their work. While most of the speakers' bureaus focus exclusively on providing experts to speak at events, Amplify supports the inclusion of people with lived experience in other capacities beyond speaking, such as participating in convenience, conferences, advisory boards, working groups, program design, evaluation, consulting, research, policy initiatives, and other project work.
Yeah, and I'll jump in and I'll go quickly. I'm saying, one, actively seeking input from underserved and disinvested populations and communities. Key informant interviews or listening sessions, community forums, focus groups, partnering with CBOs, fostering shared decision-making by providing accessible health information, whether that's language or those with disability needs, and empowering individuals to actively participate in their own care. I mentioned self-advocacy and autonomy. Advocating for policies and practices that prioritize health equity and truly address the systemic needs of underserved populations and communities.
Excellent. Thank you all for that wonderful panel discussion.
Thank you for listening. This podcast is presented by the Lewin Group and is supported through the Medicare-Medicaid Coordination Office at the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. MMCO is dedicated to helping beneficiaries enrolled in Medicare and Medicaid have access to seamless, high-quality healthcare that includes the full range of covered services in both programs. To support providers in their efforts to deliver more integrated, coordinated care, MMCO is developing technical assistance and actionable tools based on successful innovations and care models. To learn more about current efforts and resources, please visit our website, www.resourcesforintegratedcare.com. You can also find us on Twitter. Our handle is @integrate_care, or follow Resources for Integrated Care on LinkedIn to stay up to date with our recent products and technical assistance.